the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Health care reform failed this week in the Senate, and the next subject is tax reform. But realistically, will they get it done? And what will it look like? Who will be the winners and who will be the losers? Joining me on the program is Chris Hennessy. He's professor of law at Babson College and consultant to Putnam Investments. And Chris, last time we had you on the show talking about taxes right around April 15th, there were two kinds of plans that were being submitted. There were the president's plan on tax rates, and then there was the GOP plan. The tax brackets, I guess when we look at the tax brackets, there were 0, 12, 25, and 33 versus, let's say, the 35 and 39.6. Since then, there's been a couple ideas, one floated by the president this week, that he might raise taxes for the upper income individuals, and it was suggested a tax rate of 42 to 44. I've heard a couple senators talk about a 35% tax rate. So let's talk about tax reform. Number one, do you think it's possible it'll get done this year because health care reform has gone nowhere?
Sure. I think there is a difference, Jim. Tax reform is a little bit different. The healthcare thing was highly complex because it interwove both Medicaid and so-called repeal of Obamacare. I think the difference is with tax reform, number one, on the corporate side, there's a fair amount of Democratic bipartisan support. And secondly, Republican side, these Republicans do not want to go back to their districts, whether they're in the Senate or the House, and say, okay, well, we campaigned, Trump campaigned, said we're going to get tax cuts. We didn't get it done, or I voted against it. So that would hurt them in midterm elections, which, of course, is a little more than a year away. So I think there is a difference. Now, to your point about you mentioning individual brackets, whether the scope of this will be as large as originally outlined, because remember, as originally outlined, you're talking about individual tax cuts, corporate tax cuts, repeal the estate and gift tax, repeal the alternative minimum tax. And the bracket question is simply driven by the mathematics of all this. I mean, there's a difference between tax cuts and tax reform. Trump talks about a $5 trillion tax cut. That's a reduction in revenue, reducing marginal rates, both on the corporate side and the individual side. Tax reform is something the GOP, Paul Ryan, talks a lot about. That's tax simplification, Jim. So I think it will get done probably towards the end of the year. A very interesting question is, what would the effective date be? Will it be retroactive or prospective?
And what's the likelihood, Chris, that they do actually reduce the tax rates? I mean, if they reduce, well, let's take the tax rates right now, 39.6, and then you have the Pease Amendment, you know, that adds another 1%. Then on top of that, you have the Medicare tax that goes into effect, which could be as high as 3.8. So, I mean, you're almost at 44 right now for upper income individuals. Because anytime you cut taxes, the opposition party says, well, you're benefiting the rich. Well, you know, hate to say it, but the rich pay the majority of taxes. So what's the chances that they will stick together on that and lower those tax rates?
I think the rates on the individual side will come down, but I think the trade-off will be the loss of itemized deductions, with the exception of charity and mortgage interest. The other thing they'll do is they bring the rates down, and maybe probably not to 33, but I think 35% is more realistic. The other thing they'll do is they'll take the standard deduction and at least double it. The standard deduction is for folks that don't add up enough to itemize. And right now, that amount is $12,700 if you're married and $6,350 if you're single. They'll probably double that. So today, somewhere in the range of 70, 75% of all taxpayers take the standard deduction, the rest itemized. That number would change. Probably 95% of all taxpayers would take the standard deduction. It'd be simple for them. And only 5% would actually itemize. So the whole marginal rate thing is going to be driven by the mathematics of, okay, how much revenue do we need? We're going to give up revenue, but then how are we going to make that up, particularly through limiting itemized deductions?
Here's a question that the Wall Street Journal was talking about. If they eliminate, in exchange for lower brackets, they get rid of, for example, the deduction on property taxes and state taxes, they were talking about many states, my own state of California being one of them, would really get hit hard because we have a 13.3% income tax rate. Real estate is so expensive here, and the tax rates, property tax rates, can get, depending on where you live, up to 2%. That would really have a major impact on these high tax states like New York, New Jersey, California, and some of these other states.
No question about it. And it's a question that comes up a lot when I speak across the country. The reason they're going after that particular one, I mean, some people argue, well, it's all the blue states and they voted against Trump, so he's trying to get back at them. I don't think that's really the logic behind it, Jim. I think the logic is that when you look at the top 10 breaks we get as individual taxpayers, tax breaks, state and local taxes is about number 5 on the list. And eliminating, as you just said, real estate taxes and state income tax reduction raises about $100 billion a year in revenue. By the way, the biggest tax break we get is when we work for a company and that company pays all or part, nobody pays all, but pays part of our health care insurance premiums. It's a benefit to me or a benefit to you. That's tax-free on the tax return. That's the biggest break we get as individual taxpayers. So while you mentioned states like California, New York, New Jersey, and so forth, there are, of course, other states, most notably Texas, Nevada, Florida, South Dakota, that, of course, love this because they don't care about losing the state income tax deduction. And on balance, their real estate taxes are considerably less. So it's a bit of a trade-off, but you're absolutely right. When I speak out in California, those folks out there, they realize their taxes are going to go up, even though the margin rates will come down. That it's just a trade-off that they're going to have to raise revenue from some source. And the source right now is going to be to eliminate the deduction for state and local taxes.
Is that easier to get done? I know that one of the alternatives to make up for revenue loss was the border adjustment tax. Have they abandoned that completely?
Yeah. In fact, I just got an email this morning from Bloomberg. That's gone. That's off the table. Now, here's something interesting. I haven't seen much about this lately, but my sources tell me the backup plan to the border adjustment tax is a carbon tax of some sort. Details to follow. So
wow.
It's sort of ironic that the Republicans would bring up some sort of a carbon tax. But again, the math has to work. And the reason the math has to work is the following. They're going to try to do this tax reform package through reconciliation in the U.S. Senate. That avoids the 60-vote filibuster rule and thus just a majority vote. But when you do legislation through reconciliation, it's got to be revenue neutral. It cannot increase the deficit. It cannot increase spending. If it's not revenue neutral, then it expires at the end of 10 years. It sunsets. So they're looking for these pockets of revenue. That's why the border adjustment tax was on the table, because they want this to be permanent. Nothing's really permanent, as you know, but they don't want it to sunset in 10 years.
You know, it's amazing because when they talk about these things, I guess one of the things that I'm really afraid of, and we saw this when Reagan came in the 80s, and we had all kinds of tax shelters and tax deductions. You used to deduct sales tax, and they reduced the income tax from 50 to 28%, phased it in over 3 years, but they got rid of all the tax deductions up first. So we had 1 year, I think, of 28% tax rates, then Bush Sr. got in, and he raised the tax rates back up again, and then Clinton did. So what's the chances that, you know, once they get us down and get rid of these deductions, then they say, you know, they go right back up again?
Yeah, and they could. Yeah, when you look, Jim, at the big macro picture, 3/4 of the revenue comes from individuals. It's all revenue coming into the country, the United States, and 1/4 from the companies, corporations. So it's bounced around quite a bit, the marginal rates, deductions have bounced around. But, you know, you mentioned Reagan, and also if you go way back, even Kennedy had a tax cut. It's classic supply-side economics. So, again, you know, kind of one of the questions I get quite a bit is, does this stuff really work? There's some debate about it, but when you trace back to the Reagan years, it did work during his 8 years as president. He came in 1981. 1982, there was a recession, but then in 83, through the rest of his presidency, there was really good growth in GDP. So there is evidence that this does work, this supply side, you know, the so-called Arthur-Laffer curve, if you will.
Now, the interesting thing about this, Chris, is when they talk about lowering taxes and you talk about making a deficit neutral, if you lower taxes, then obviously you're going to raise taxes somewhere else. So we're going to end up paying taxes. So it's a matter of who pays it and how.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, the key to the supply side is, and I think it's more true and somewhat in the corporate side, if you bring these rates down, then individuals have more money to spend. They're going to spend in the economy. If you bring the rates down for corporations, for companies, then their earnings per share go up. Their cash flow goes up. They're going to spend more on infrastructure, on property, plant, and equipment, on hiring more employees, and so forth. But you do have a baseline amount you're spending. And as we all know, under President Trump, defense spending is going up. Other areas of spending are going up. And Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security are the three real drivers, I think, on a macro level as we look out 10, 15 years. Those numbers are going to skyrocket because of an aging U.S. population.
Let's move on from the tax rates. So you think there will be some cuts in the tax rates, and we'll probably end up getting rid of some form of our itemized deductions, most likely state and property taxes, which, once again, there's about 10 states in this country that have California at the top of the list. And it's amazing if that generates an exodus, because California is losing taxpayers in over the last 5 or 6 years as they've raised taxes. And a lot of the companies, even the high tech companies, are building their new plants elsewhere. They're not building them here in California. So let's move on to investment income, because right now you have a 20% tax on capital gains and dividends. And then depending on your income, you have an additional 3.8% Obamacare tax. What happens there?
Okay, so two different possibilities, or actually maybe 3 points. Under the Trump plan, nothing. The 20% tax would remain the same. Don't forget, though, that 20% capital gains rate does not kick in unless you're in the top tax bracket of 39.6%, which means if you're married, you've got over $470,000 of bottom line income. Otherwise, the capital gains rate is 15%. The Republican or so-called GOP plan, instead of a 20% max rate, it would be 16.5%, so slightly less. But big item, and you mentioned it, Jim, is the surtax, the 3.8% Medicare surtax. That surtax is part of Affordable Care. It's part of Obamacare. Well, so far, Obamacare is with us. It hasn't been repealed. So if it doesn't go away, we're still going to have a 3.8% surtax, which kicks up your overall rate to a top rate of either 23.8, or in the case of the GOP plan, it would be somewhere in the range of 20%. See, the plan was to get rid of Affordable Care Act and get rid of the 3.8% tax. But right now, as of at least yesterday, we still have Affordable Care Act. So the investment, to answer your question, the tax on investment income would stay approximately the same.
All right. So they lower the tax rates. We lose some big deductions, you know, in states like California for property tax and, let's say, state income tax. Chris, do you think that forces some states to look at changing their tax rates? I mean, you have a lot of big money in California that, you know, one of the saving graces is if you're Larry Lots of Bucks and you're in that 39% to 44% tax bracket, well, some of the things that help you out is you get to deduct your state taxes and your property taxes. Do you think these states will reform some of their tax rates if they begin to lose high-end taxpayers or a lot of businesses who basically just say pack up and leave? We just lost another major corporation in California this year.
So I think a couple of things to think about. One, some of these states, California, Illinois is another good example, are in a box because of the large number of public employees who have retired and are drawing down pensions and health care benefits. So those states have to find ways to continue a revenue flow. Now, for example, it's always fascinated me that California, yes, 13.3% at the top, but California does not have an estate tax or death tax at the local California level. That might be something they think about. But on the other hand, many of the states like New Jersey, New York, that do have an estate tax have actually begun to phase it out or have the amount exempt much higher because they're losing residents. People are re-domiciling to states like Florida. And I think California, that you mentioned earlier, companies are beginning to think about that. I know a lot of California businesses have gone to Texas. So it's not going to be so easy for a state like California to just say, we'll lower the tax rate because of the need for revenue to fund that large public employee system.
So let's, for a moment, move away from individuals and move to the corporate tax side, because right now the U.S. has the highest tax rates in the world at 35%. You have somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 to $2.5 trillion of untaxed profits that remain overseas by U.S. corporations that they don't want to bring back here, because if they do, they're going to get hit with that 35% tax rate. What are the chances they lower tax rates for corporations, and specifically for flow-through corporations? A lot of small businesses have corporations that are sub-S corporations where it flows directly through there. What are the chances of corporate reform?
I think the chances are even better than individual. If they get muddied down and stuck, I think they're clearly going to try to get corporate done. The reason is this will have a much more direct impact on the economy and a much quicker impact. And I think there's, again, two plans. Trump's plan is a 15% corporate rate from the 35% rate. The Republican plan is a 20% rate from 35, but for flow-through entities, including sole proprietors, a 25% tax. I don't think Trump will get 15. It's just too costly. But I would not be surprised to see the 35% go down to 20 to 23% in the so-called S-Corp. Flow-through rate, Jim, go to maybe 25%. That's a big reduction. In fact, just to throw some numbers out, one of the things I've read is every 1% reduction in the corporate tax rate will cause earnings per share growth in the S&P of $1.31. And the repatriation you mentioned, the 2.4, 2.5 trillion, I usually use 2.6, that's gigantic. If you have legislation that says, okay, you can bring that money back, you're going to be taxed maybe 1% a year over 10 years. I've read that that alone, that repatriation alone, could boost S&P 500 earnings by 3 to 4%. So I think the chances are higher you get corporate than you get individual.
What are the chances they do, like under George W. Bush, looking at overseas corporate income that's over there that hasn't been brought back, that they do a special tax rate? Like if you bring $1 million back, you're only going to pay 10% tax. What are the chances they do something like that? Because that could be immediate tax revenues to the government.
Yeah, I think that's a very high chance. In the history of this, it goes back to David Camp. David Camp was chair of House Ways and Means a number of years ago. He had a plan to do exactly that. And the plan, I believe the plan at that time was, okay, you can bring the money back. You're going to be taxed at 1% a year over 10 years. And I think it'll be something similar to that. So you pay a 10% tax instead of a 35% tax, or if the tax rates come down, pay a 20 or 23% tax. By the way, interestingly, most people are not aware of this. There was a sort of a tax holiday for corporations back in 2005. And I can't remember what the terms were in terms of the rate. But voluntarily, it wasn't required, but voluntarily, I think there was $500 or $600 billion overseas. Half of it came back voluntarily because the companies were given a tax break. And then as we move forward in time, we're going to go to a territorial tax system, so there will be no advantage to parking these profits overseas.
And there seems to be, at least from what I've gathered following the news, that there seems to be more bipartisan support for lowering corporate taxes, because even Democrats have to get reelected and they know that that's a good thing. Okay, so let's say there's a probability. Chris, could you see something where there's such disagreement and disarray with Republicans that the only thing they get done is, let's say, corporate tax reform?
Yeah, I could see that. And then the other interesting related question is, if they don't get this done until, say, the end of 2017, what's the effective date? Is it effective the day it's signed by the president moving forward, or does it go retroactive? I mean, I've seen a fair amount of support to go retroactive, because the advantage is saying, okay, effective, just make it up, July 1 of 2017, companies have a 23% corporate tax rate, and flow-through businesses and sole proprietors have a 25% effective rate. Wow. That jumpstarts the economy immediately. The problem with going forward in time is it takes at least 3 months, if not maybe 6 months, for it to get into the economy and get GDP growth going above, it's in less than 2%. So I think you're right. I think there's a very high chance this will happen. There's Democratic support. By the way, in the U.S. Senate, the Republicans are only defending 8 seats in the midterm elections. The Democrats are supporting basically 25 seats, 23 for Democrats and 2 for independents. And 10 of those seats could flip. So that's why you're going to get Democratic support for this.
All right, let's move on to a couple other things that affect individuals, and that is the alternative minimum tax. It was originally put in place back in the days when there were all kinds of tax shelters, and it was a sort of a gotcha tax for wealthy people that were trying to shelter their income. But because it hasn't been adjusted with inflation, a lot of middle-class taxpayers are getting hit with this. They've done some Band-Aids on it and deferred it. What are the chances of AMT getting repealed, and the next one, which hurts a lot of small businesses, the estate tax?
Sure. So let me answer those in order. If on the individual side, you eliminate property tax reduction, state income tax reduction, it makes perfect sense to get rid of AMT, alternative minimum tax, because under AMT, you cannot deduct real estate and property taxes and state income tax anyway. So if the legislation says that deduction is gone, there's no sense in having an AMT tax. So I think that probably will be repealed. Now, the estate and gift is really interesting. It just doesn't amount to anything. There's less than 4,000 deaths per year in this country where the size of the estate is greater than $5 million. The entire revenue from the estate and gift tax is around $28 billion per year. So get rid of it. Now, of course, the political problem with what I just said is the Democrats will argue that's a tax break for the wealthy. The Republicans have always said, it's unfair to small business owners, to farmers, and so forth. But I do think the estate and gift tax could go away. Don't forget, if it goes away, it could come back. It could come back in 10 years through sunset. It could come back if the Democrats get in office again. They could bring it back. But I do think there's a high chance. Now, they may take the estate and gift away immediately, or they might phase it out over time.
Let me throw something out, because as we've been talking about, if you lower taxes on one hand, you're going to raise taxes somewhere else on the other hand. One of the issues they're talking about that affects more people than the super rich, and that's the stepped up basis in cost. And what that means for our listeners is, let's say you bought, I don't know, Amazon stock when it was $100 a share. Now it's over $1,000 a share. You die, the capital gains are forgiven at death. So your heirs could turn around, sell Amazon at $1,000 and not pay any capital gains taxes. And Reagan put that in because a lot of people were getting double taxed. First, they'd have to come up with the estate taxes. To come up with the estate taxes, they'd have to sell assets. As they sold assets, they got hit again with capital gains. So this will affect a lot more Americans if they get rid of the step up because, you know, people own some stock or maybe they bought a house that they paid a certain amount of money in California and it's appreciated tremendously. What about that? Because that seems to me, this would be almost a revenue raiser if you get rid of the step up, because there are a lot more people with capital gains than there are estates that are larger than 11 million.
You're right. Part of the proposal would be to eliminate that step up. However, most likely there'd be a $10 million exception. So in other words, you could always take assets like your Amazon example and step up from whatever cost that asset was at to $10 million. Basically, what I'm saying is anyone that is out there that has $10 million or less of net worth or wealth, they wouldn't be worried about the loss of step up. But the wealthier people over $10 million, it would impact them because now the beneficiaries will have an embedded capital gain, a lower cost basis when they sell the asset. By the way, interestingly, Canada does this right now. What Canada does is no step up at death. When the beneficiary sells the asset, then there's a larger capital gain.
So taking a 40,000 feet view, a big picture view, in your assessment, what do you think likely gets done here, given the fact that the Republican Party is in complete disarray? They can't even get health care. There's also media pressure. Anytime you try to lower taxes, hey, you're just benefiting rich people. You know, that's the standard argument. What's the chance if anything gets done? And if so, what does get done if it does come about?
Yeah, it's a crystal ball thing, Jim, but I do think that you're going to see tax reform rolled out right after August recess. Here's the reason. You're going to have to connect the tax reform to the new budget. The budget that is effective October 1, there's going to have to be a budget resolution. So you've got to get this done pretty quickly. Now, obviously, everyone's going to go on August recess now. They've got the legislation. It's not like House Ways and Means doesn't have this written. They have the core legislation, but they've got to roll it out. Normal rules of order, you get it through the House first. The House is majority Republican. Then it goes over to the Senate. The issue in the Senate with all this is going to be the mathematics. Is this tax reform, tax reduction, tax cut going to increase the deficit? And that's going to get into the so-called Congressional Budget Office scoring and so forth. So I think the timing of this is September to see at least more details. Then they'll begin to debate it in the fall.
So the budget process has to be done by as we get into fall. I just wonder, Chris, when they finally leave healthcare and just move on to get something, because it looks like healthcare is going nowhere. And doesn't that pose a risk for Republicans that are running for re-election? They voted against Obamacare. When they got time to do something, a good handful of them said absolutely no.
No, I think you're totally correct. I think not so much in the Senate, but there's a huge risk in the House. I mean, it would only take in midterm elections 24-seat swing, and the House is Democratic, and Nancy Pelosi is leading the House. So, yeah, I think the Republicans have got to get their act together and get something done.
But, you know, the risk here is you got two chambers. You've got the Senate, which there are fewer Republicans running for re-election. It's more of a Democratic risk this time around. And then you have everybody in the House is running. So if the Senate stops things from getting done, as happened last night, don't they pose risk for their counterparts and their compatriots in the House?
Absolutely. And really, the stumbling block has been the Senate, primarily because you have a group of very conservative senators. I mean, I can't name them all, but you've got obviously Lindsey Graham, John McCain, Mike Lee, Susan Collins, Rand Paul, and they are really concerned, and I think to some extent rightfully so, about deficits going up if we cut taxes and we can't make that revenue up through some other source.
Chris, in your mind, if anything's going to get done, the key dates are going to be probably somewhere in the neighborhood, September, October, because it sounds like these guys are ready to go on summer recess now that they've failed with health care reform. So if we do get it, look for September and October.
Exactly, Jim.
All right, Chris. Well, listen, I want to thank you for joining us on the program and apprise us of what you think is likely to get done. Sounds like something will get done. If anything, it's probably going to be done on the corporate side. Maybe we'll get lucky and we'll see something on the individual side. Although for people like myself to live in California, that doesn't look too good for us. So we may have to move. Chris, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
You're welcome, Jim. Have a great day.
Well, once again, we will be talking about a lot of changes, but so far, Republicans have been unable to deliver anything. And it's now a question with budget deficits and a national debt of over $20 trillion and debt rising faster than GDP growth. Will they do anything at all? Well, you'll have to stay tuned and listen. We have lots to talk about in the months ahead, but the key months will be September and October. The government's fiscal year ends in September. If they're going to get something done, as Chris talked about, that will be the time if it gets done at all. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.